Welcome to the Women and Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women in Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Esther, konnichiwa.
Bonne année.
Oh, see, I'm not prepared for that. I just know hello.
Well, I said Happy New Year in French.
Oh, well, there you go. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Well, this is a Happy New Year. And for one of your first shows of this year, you have a guest on today, and that is Allison Salisbury. Why don't you introduce us to her?
I do. I'm really happy to introduce you all to Allison Salisbury. She's the owner and founder of Fiscally Fit. She is also the current president of the American Association of Daily Money Managers, also known as ADAM. And she is a wonderful colleague. It's so critical that there are people who provide service like Allison. Allison, I'm so glad you're here today.
Well, thank you, Esther. I'm really glad to be here.
Allison, you provide such an important service for many people getting clear on their personal finances and cash flow. And I also know about you that this is not the career that you've had your whole life. Can you tell us a bit? You have a really interesting story about how you came to be in the role that you are that I think is also helpful for the listeners, women in transition, to hear about another woman experiencing a transition and how she came to be where she is. Could you share a bit about that with us?
Oh, sure. You know, it's kind of a funny story in a way. You know, I was going through a long, drawn out, kind of messy divorce. And we lived in Silicon Valley at the time. It was 2008, which I'm sure many people remember was kind of an implosion of the whole, you know, financial situation in our country. And recently laid off from a teaching job and really kind of in a tailspin about what to do. And one day my soon-to-be ex-husband came by with our youngest child and basically said, you know, I can't manage anything. I don't know how much money I have. I don't, you know, haven't done my taxes. I can't figure out how to do the bills. It's all your fault, you know, that kind of thing.
And because you were the one who handled all that, right, within the marriage?
Right. Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, he hired a couple of professional organizers, you know, one at a time, paid them $100 an hour to manage all this stuff. And all they did, as he said, was put it all, you know, they just stacked all the paper up. Do this, you know, a little piles of paper. He said they didn't do squat. And I thought, well, my goodness, you know, to me, it's like, it is like washing the dishes, right? I thought anybody can do this. It never occurred to me that, you know, that this was something that other people would struggle with and that somebody might pay somebody to provide this service. So that's actually how I got the idea of starting the business.
Isn't it funny? Of all people.
Of all people. I know, right? And everyone says, so was he your first client? I can say absolutely not. No, he was never a client. And I think he did find someone else when he realized what he really needed to do.
Well, before we launch into this topic of how to get clarity around spending, can you tell us a little bit about the types of clients that you do serve?
Sure. You know, when I started the business, I thought that the obvious client would be somebody in their 70s, 80s, you know, an elderly person who, mm-hmm. you know, might be not cognitive issues so much, but, you know, maybe having vision issues or mm-hmm. arthritis in the hands, not able to write checks and, you know, that kind of thing. And interestingly, that was the first first set of clients that I found. But then we started attracting younger families. And as I said, we were in the Silicon Valley area. And so a lot of these families, you know, these are kids in their 20s and 30s, and they have these high-tech jobs. They earn a, you know, gob of money. And nobody teaches our kids in schools about how to manage their money. So, you know, these young college graduates are getting these jobs, and they're earning really significant money and have no idea how to manage it. And so we were finding that we were attracting a group of them. Since then, we've branched out now, and we have high net worth families also in the San Francisco Bay Area. And these are people typically that are very savvy, and they're busy. You know, they have very busy households, busy family lives, busy philanthropic lives, that kind of thing. And so they just don't want to manage the day-to-day kind of thing. So they'll, you know, they'll bring someone else in to basically be, in a way, the CFO, if you will. Not so much exactly decision-making, but just making things happen.
Mm-hmm. Right, like the household CFO.
Correct, yeah. Or like a home office kind of thing.
Right, right. And so we're going to talk about one of the things that makes it, it's just one of the more challenging areas, that helping people get a handle on how much they're spending. I hear this from clients quite frequently. And when I'm starting to work on planning with a new client, I always say that it's kind of hard for a new client initially, because we need all this data to be able to reflect back and get on a path towards answers and decision making. And mm-hmm. getting the information on you know, that four word question, what are you spending, is perplexing. We all knew about budgeting when we were, you know, just maybe leaving home. Well, I will say we all knew, but we basically knew we had a small amount of money. It had to pay the rent. It had to pay for the ramen noodles. It had to pay for the utilities.
Right. Right.
We just had a few things. And even our parents' generation, there were fewer categories of things. And now with mm-hmm. the internet spending, credit cards, that really just exploded the different categories and areas of spending, to where now my experience is over and over, it's so challenging. And this is where you have come in so effectively. So can you talk a bit about, you know, honestly, wherever you'd like to start about helping people get a handle on their mm-hmm. spending?
Sure.
You have such a, I will actually come in with that later. So yeah. I will say you have such a kind way with people on this area, because people have a lot of shame about their spending. So talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Sure, of course. And thank you for saying such a nice thing. 100% of our clients really just want clarity. And it doesn't really matter what, you know, what a person's net worth is, or, you know, how much money they earn. You know, we have a difference too between high earners and high net worth. You know, we mm-hmm. have quite a few of our clients will come into us, and they're high earners, but they have no net worth, and they're, you know, they don't know where their money goes. They're not watching it, basically. And there is a lot of shame around that. And I find, you know, I've been guilty of it myself, you know, and when I was in that practice marriage, as I call it, you know, we had a significant amount of money coming in, and we just spent it, you know, not paying any attention, you know. And I mean, I was good about making sure all the bills were paid. We were never late with anything, but we weren't saving anything. And I could not tell you how much we spent every month on groceries. You know, I really didn't know. And going through that experience really taught me how important it is for us to really know our numbers, to really know them in our core, if you will. And when I start working with clients, I let them know that they're not alone. And I share my own story, really, oftentimes anyway. And it's a matter really of embracing the fact that it's just numbers. And when we can just think of the numbers as just numbers, and they do tell a story, but it's a story without judgment. And that's what I try to work with, you know, with my clients. We go back several months and just, you know, collect the data, basically. I use Quicken. You know, it's the easiest, most robust personal finance software in terms of connectivity with all the financial institutions, that kind of thing. So we will use Quicken. I share all the data with clients. We go through and we do a deep dive into the last however many months. Sometimes it's a year or 18 months, you know, depending on how complicated a person's situation might be. But we go back and we look through and we say, well, you know, how much have you spent on, you know, these certain categories? And it's usually pretty enlightening, you know, and we can tell when people are going through a tough time because there'll be a lot of emotional spending. You know, for women, for example, it's not uncommon for women to buy a lot of clothes during an emotionally difficult time. And for men, it's other things, you know, it might be hobbies of various sorts, or, you know, we'll just see, you know, a real uptick in.
Yeah. What do men spend their money on, Allison?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Well, the two most out there for men, one was was pornography, and and we talked about it. You know, we all have ways that we bust out, right, so to speak,
right.
And so
stress management.
He had so much shame about all of that, and you know, so I took the tack of, let's just look at the numbers, you know. Another man, it was gambling, and he kept calling it a spending addiction was what he called it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I finally just said to him, you know, we just really need to be very direct about this, because you need to really look at what your behavior is here. And now, you know, I don't try to fix those things, you know. I just look at the numbers, and I just call them what they are. And then, you know, when people have clarity around how they're spending their money, they can make intelligent decisions about what they want to do about it, right? So
right.
That's all. That's where I'm coming from, is basically allowing people to know what's happening in their spending so that they can make the choice about what it is they want to do to change the behavior.
And that's one of the things that's so critical, because our cash flow is, it's going from the place of being a passenger, so to speak, to being in the driver's seat with how we're navigating this really key part of our financial planning is our income and how do we navigate it. You mentioned before about categories. That's a challenging area. How do you help people categorize their expenses?
Yeah, that's actually that is a good one. You know, with categories, one example I have is, you know, long ago with my practice husband, we were beta users of Quicken. This was even before the internet really took hold. But way back in the day, we were both working at MIT, and we had a, you know, hardcore Ethernet, you know, connection and all that kind of thing to the Institute. But we were using Quicken way back in its early days when it came in a box, in a disk, and right. We had to manually enter everything into the program. And my husband was so tickled with this idea of managing our household finances on the computer, right? So he would take it over from time to time. And I loved a garden, so I had a category for lawn and garden, which actually is a canned category within Quicken, and I created a subcategory called tools, right? So I would put all my garden tools in there. And he, on the other hand, being a man, you know, he has an upper level category that he created called tools. And under that, he put a subcategory called garden. So when we went to run reports, you know, and there were instances of this kind of thing going on all over, you know, our reports. So it just was such a cumbersome category list, you know, It basically felt like a house of cards, you know, and it was very difficult to really analyze the data. So when I work with clients, the first thing we do is we do look at the category list if they've already been using Quicken, and I can spot pretty easily a lot of duplications and that kind of thing. And I work with the client to really clean things up. One of the things I find very effective with clients is that Everybody has a phone bill, but we all think about how we organize things in a different way. So every client's Quicken file is customized specifically for that client. I want those reports to make perfect sense to those clients. So I work with a client and reorganize and clean up all of the categories. Some people get so detailed and so in the weeds. And one thing I do try to do with those people is try to lift them up a little bit, you know, so that we're focusing a little bit more on the global picture rather than getting so deep into the weeds that we can't see the whole picture.
Yeah, those are great points, because I know that I would probably be one of the weedier people. And I can say for me, that was one of my ways of trying to feel control over the spending. It's like, okay, if I can get everything there, then there's this feeling of control where it doesn't really give you that, because afterwards you're so tired from categorizing, you don't really absorb anything from the reports.
That's right. That's right. I mean, there's a real difference between counting every single penny and assigning every single penny to such minutiae that, you know, your reports are like 8 pages long when they could only be two pages long or a page and a half long, right? So, yeah, exactly.
So how can we make it? I mean, categories is one area. I want to stick with this for a moment, because there are things like these are things I've heard. Well, what do you do with Costco? You know, you get clothes in Costco, you get groceries in Costco, you get tires in Costco, you get electronics in Costco, you get cat food, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Prescriptions. And, so how do you that's one. How do you take the Costco's and the Targets and all of that?
Right. And the Walgreens and the Walmarts and, you know, their department stores, basically, you know. So there's different ways of tackling that. And sometimes what we do is, for people who are really compulsive, I may ask them as they're checking out to separate their items by categories, right? So all the food goes through the conveyor belt, and they pay for that separately, and then they put the household items in a different category. So it really doesn't take any more time for the checker. You know, it's basically the client really has to kind of be thinking in terms of organization, you know, as they're loading things on. And there's always stuff that's going to, you know, spill over into the wrong category and that kind of thing. But you get a pretty good idea of the amounts that you're spending in each category. Mm-hmm. Another and much more painful way to do this is to actually just go through the receipts and figure that out. One way that we've done in the past is we'll painfully go through all of the receipts, and we'll just kind of figure out that, well, you know, it seems like on average, every time you go to Costco, 60% of what you spend is on groceries and 40% is on household items or cleaning items. You know, a lot of people like to separate the paper goods, for example, or the pet food, you know, that kind of thing. They'll separate them out. And so if we can kind of get a baseline average, then what we may do is just split the Costco or Target or Walgreens, whatever, into a generic percentage and just do it that way for a while and then do a spot check every now and then. So those are different ways we can do that. Personally, I think separating the items out, and if you're ordering online, it's really easy. You just do separate orders, right? And, you know, I find that that is the most accurate.
So let's transition a bit then into, because what do we, you know, what do people do with this information? They've got, let's say at this point, a well-categorized picture of where the money's going.
Sure. Well, you know, it's interesting. Once we get that information, we look at it very carefully. And I like to print out reports month by month, because you see trends, right? And particularly in this last year, you know, with the pandemic and all that kind of thing, we could really see some interesting trends in spending. And, you know, like I said earlier, people They want clarity. You know, where does my money go? You know, we're a family of four. Should we be spending $3,000 a month on groceries? You know, they want to know that they're normal, right? Mm-hmm. $3,000 a month for four people is a little high, you know? And, if we see that, then we'll dive down a little bit deeper. We'll drill down and we'll look to see, well, where are you buying your groceries? You know, are you buying all of your groceries in the food department at Neiman Marcus, for example? You know, maybe you might want to consider going to Safeway a little bit more frequently, you know, that kind of thing. And those kinds of things really do come up. We're very status oriented in our culture. Yeah. And in, you know, particularly in the Silicon Valley area, you know, people are particularly status oriented. And so they feel like they're comparing themselves to other people a lot. Mm-hmm. And I find that if we can do a deep dive into where they're spending their money, how they're spending their money, you know, I can normalize things for people because I see a lot of it, right? And, you know, I can tell them that for a family of four, and if you've got two teenage kids, I mean, they eat you out of house and home, but even that, you know, it's still, you know, having a grocery budget every month of between, say, $1,500 and $2,000 is still pretty generous. You can do it on a lot less, but it's a heck of a lot better than a $3,000 a month grocery bill.
Yeah, I know. I have another colleague who because I don't have children, and she would bring up that status issue. It's just like, if you're thinking about moving, think about that neighborhood. What will be the expectations of the neighborhood? What type of school will the kids?
Yes.
Will your 8-year-old feel left out if they're not walking around with an iPhone at, you know,
right,
in third grade? And what about the after school activities and
exactly
all of those things? Yeah. And you see that quite frequently.
I see it a lot. I see, you know, I see women going through divorce who are they're splitting from their husband, who is a very high net worth, high tech worker. These people, both partners are used to living a lifestyle that his salary can afford. And she typically might be working part-time, maybe just doing volunteer work. I mean, she's busy, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, gone are the days are women just sitting around ironing and watching soap operas. You know, it doesn't happen anymore. You know, these women are really very fully engaged, but they're used to, you know, having country club memberships so that their kids have tennis lessons and swimming lessons and horseback, you know, riding lessons, mm-hmm, and all that kind of thing. And when that family breaks up from one family, now they're two families. And even though that high earner was able to, you know, really provide well for that one family, now that same amount of money is going to support two families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's two households, there's two sets of, you know, utility bills, there's, you know, some of the things do stay, you know, the same, like a country club membership would be, for example, but he's going to expect her to kick in something for that very expensive country club membership, you know, and maybe he didn't want to, he might not have wanted that membership in the first place, right? So there's an awful lot of negotiating, and there's a lot of angst, quite frankly, you know, about having to realize that your standard of living is going to be a little bit different. And the status thing really plays in very heavily with these people.
Yes. Yes. And it's, I think it's one of the things that speaks to how important it is to be clear on where the money goes sooner,
yeah,
rather than later, because it does. I've shared about this too in the past with my first marriage, which ended in my husband's passing, but there were times where it was really hard. And in a way, it was, thank God it's so expensive to set up a whole second household, because that kept me
right
in the marriage. saying, okay, I will stick it out because it is too expensive to set up something else. But it, you're absolutely right. It's a big shock to go through. And that is part of the passage of the transition to go, my goodness, it's not just the fact that my marriage is ending. It's a fact that a lifestyle is ending.
Right. Right. And a lot of denial. I see a lot of denial. And then when we look at the numbers, and like I said, the numbers are very non-judgmental. They don't lie. You know, they're just numbers, and they tell the truth, you know. And we look at it, you know, we'll look at these numbers as dispassionately, or I do. You know, I can't say that the client does, at least not at first, but, you know, it can be pretty eye-opening. Wow, I had no idea that I spent that much, you know, on clothing, for example. Or they'll look at guilt spending on their kids. And, you know, you see a lot of that, or I see a lot of that, and particularly in the early days of divorces. And, you know, kids really are excellent manipulators, you know. And if anybody really reaps any short-term rewards, if you will, during times of transition like that, it is the kids. Right. So,
I'm shaking my head. It's just, it's a very challenging transition for sure. Mm-hmm. What, if we're thinking about other couples or other individuals who are saying, you know, we just want to get a good handle on this. We know we're not where we could be, or we're having arguments about spending. Now, she's thinking he's spending too much. It's going to impede our chances of moving forward. How do people get started? Just because most people, in my experience is they gather the data and then they're out of time, and then it piles up again for another year.
Sure. Yeah. One of the things that when I start working with a couple, and well, oftentimes, more often than not, I'll start working with one of the members of a couple. You know, they'll approach me, and I, in my intake conversation, if you will, I ask a lot of questions about, you know, their lifestyle and what their partnership is like, you know, with their partner and or their relationship. It's not that I want to know all the sordid details or anything, but, you know, I'll just come right out and ask, you know, is your husband on board with this, or does your wife know that you're talking to me about this? Is this a concern that both of you share? And if, well, they almost always say, oh yeah, they're aware, you know, kind of thing. And I let them know that, you know, this is a partnership. You know, when you're married with somebody, or, you know, in a long-term committed relationship, this is a partnership, and we need to look at it that way. And we also need to look at it like a business. You know, we have money coming in, we have money going out, and we basically need to figure out what the cash flow is, do a profit and loss, if you will. And because they're living under the same roof, they're commingling funds, they both need to be involved in this whole process. And usually what happens is the other partner is delighted to be involved, because oftentimes they have not really been involved. Sometimes I do get situations where the partner who reached out to me initially is gung-ho, and the second partner is very reluctant. And in those cases, we'll work together, but I make sure to include reports with the other partner and kind of gently try to bring them in and let them know this is not a threatening experience, you know, that that their input is very much valued and needed, really, for the health of the financial relationship between the two. And then in other cases, I'll get a married couple who are incredibly engaged, and And they find that they're able to start talking to each other about money without having major meltdowns. You know, mm-hmm. oftentimes in the early stages, one partner, typically the woman, will be very emotional because she's got a lot of shame and, oh, we had to ask for help. We should be able to do this by ourselves, you know, that kind of thing. And she's got a lot of fear, you know, which a lot of women do. I'm mm-hmm. one of them is, mm-hmm. you know, I have that classic female fear that one day I will be widowed and I'll run out of money, you know, I'll mm-hmm. be, you know, the bag lady pushing the shopping cart. Yeah. Right. That's a very real fear even today. Mm-hmm. And, I have worked very hard, you know, to overcome that. Mm-hmm. But because I know what that feels like, I really understand, you know, when women feel that way, you know, it's not, sometimes there's shame involved in that, but it's always this, you know, dread. So many of us can relate to that. But anyway, you know, back to your original question, it is a partnership. It's a business, you know, it's the business of your household. And that's the most important thing for people to really understand is just like running a business, you have to know your numbers in order to be successful. And everybody has a different definition of what successful is, and that's great, but I want everyone to feel like they're heading in the right direction if they're not already there.
Well, that's a wonderful place to close for today, Allison. I love that, you know, again, what someone's definition of success may not equal somebody else's, but to know where one's headed so that they can attain their level of success with being clear on the numbers is what you're all about. It's what we're all about. We come at it with as a collaboration, really often in our work together. So I would still like to have you back, if that's okay, because a couple other things are around this time of cybersecurity. You mentioned also COVID a little bit earlier. I want to talk with you about how COVID has impacted people's spending and what you're seeing, and also an area that I have seen hit our clients as well, which is the targeting of seniors by scammers. Right. Could I have you back to talk about that as well?
Absolutely. I would love to.
I'm so glad to hear that. Well, thank you so much, Allison. It's so wonderful to talk to you. I feel like we could talk for a lot longer, but I'm not sure. I think others may need a break, so we will be back with session 2. One of the things, Allison, if people need to get a hold of you and reach you, what are ways that they can reach you to ask you any more questions about how you work?
Sure. They can go to our website, which is www.fiscallyfit.us, like United States. My email address is Allison, Alison, at fiscallyfit.us. And our number is 650-965-4090.
Thank you so much, Allison and Esther. What a great pair you make. Both of you work so diligently at alleviating those fears from people that are in transition, people that are going through things that are just tough. And mm-hmm. I loved listening to the conversation today. Thank you so much for the time. And of course, the last thank you goes to you, the listening audience. Thank you for tuning in and listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.